Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show.
Hey folks, welcome back to the show. Today's episode is different. Often we're talking about supplements or technology and kind of more, you know, I would call the hard science of healing and changing your health. Today's episode is different and it is amazing, if I do say so myself. My guest is Brandi Gilmore, and I don't know if you've never heard of her. I had not heard of her until I watched her TED Talk, and man, this woman is something else. Anyway, I'm going to let you get into the episode to really dig in. Before we get there, though, of course, I want to thank you, and then we need to thank our sponsors who make these shows possible. So first, thanks for me. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of the comments and feedback that I've been getting from you guys lately. It's been phenomenal. Really kind of gives me so much inspiration to keep going and getting out there and finding amazing guests for you guys. Now, about finding amazing guests, we also do really well when people leave us reviews. So if you don't mind taking a moment and heading over to whatever platform you're listening to this on and leaving us a review, that would be awesome. And last but not least, if you want to keep in touch with me and keep abreast of all the things that I'm doing, then head on over to natnidham.com and make sure to sign up for my newsletter, because that's how we get to keep in touch on a week-by-week basis. All right, let's thank our first sponsor. So look, we are definitely starting to come out of the winter months. However, you don't want to let up on your immune system support just yet. And one of my favorite supplements to support immunity is Body Bio's liposomal vitamin C. Lipo-C is a very high quality, pure vitamin C encased in true liposomes for special delivery straight into your cells. And what I love about this is that nothing is wasted. Whereas typically you'd excrete a lot of the regular vitamin C supplement you take, liposomal C gets right into your cells where it can benefit you the most. So therefore, you frankly just get more bang for your buck. And for those of us who suffer from seasonal allergies, which are coming right around the corner, Body Bio liposomal vitamin C also could be a game changer to support that healthy immune response. Now, to place your first order and to save 15%, head over to bodybio.com and make sure to use code Natalie at checkout, N-A-T-H-A-L-I-E. All right, let's talk about the episode. We've all heard of the placebo effect. So we're pretty sure that our minds have healing abilities, right? But how powerful is it really? Well, pretty powerful. And in this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast, I get to chat with Brandi Gilmore about her life-changing injury and how she healed herself with her mind. We discuss the power of positive reinforcement, the importance of repetition in creating new positive neural pathways, and how emotions influence healing. It's important to be careful with how you talk to yourself. There's that whole expression, what you speak, you will become, so that you're not reinforcing negative energy. Our conversation covers biophotons, their implications in healing due to the effect it has on cellular proliferation, and so much more. Overall, we're going to offer you some guidance for working on your health outside of conventional methods and the power that our emotions have over our bodies. Brandi Gilmore, you will soon find out, is a fabulous motivational speaker, author, as well as a consultant. Her expertise really began after her own devastating illness when she found herself somewhere she never imagined that she would be. Disabled, spending most of her days in bed on various forms of morphine, and yet still in extreme pain. You know, for years she was told there was nothing that could be done, and that's when she became determined to get her life back. And I'm going to let her tell you her own story yourself. But basically now, fast forward to today, Brandi's completely out of pain. She's most definitely not in bed or in a wheelchair. And she works with people worldwide to help them understand the profound impact that stress and emotions can have on their bodies and their lives. Now, to learn more about Brandi Gilmore, you can go to her website, brandigilmore.com, or you can check out her TED Talk, or you can check out her podcast. She also hosts a podcast called Heal Yourself, Change Your Mind. And of course, you can follow her at Brandi Gilmore on Instagram. And finally, you can order her book, called Master Your Mind and Energy to Heal Your Body, which is available on Kindle, Amazon, and at Barnes & Noble. Now, if you want a super special offer from Brandy and maybe think that, hey, you want to dig into this information a little bit more, you're going to want to head over to brandygilmore.com/nat-gift, and you will get a free 90-minute training from Brandy and with a very super amazing special offer right after that. So I think the 90-minute training on its own will be worth the price of your time, and it's free. So once again, that's brandygilmore.com/nat-gift. Okay, one more sponsor we want to thank, and that, of course, is our Berkeley Life sponsor, who's been such an amazing supporter of this podcast. If you're transitioning into the spring looking for a little extra something to kickstart your season, I continue to strongly recommend adding nitric oxide support from Berkeley Life to your daily supplement stack. It's like nitric oxide helps extend my energy throughout the day. It gets and keeps my blood flowing. It helps me through my workouts. It improves my focus. I love stepping into the day feeling energetic, engaged, and mentally ready to juggle a full podcaster's schedule. As my listeners, I know how hard you work to feel and perform your best. So don't leave anything on the table. Go to berkeleylife.com and use code NIDDBL to get plugged into the power of nitric oxide. And that NIDDBL will give you 10% off your first order as well as free shipping. So head on over to berkeleylife.com today. And now let's jump into the episode.
Hey folks, just a quick reminder that all of the information presented in this podcast is for information purposes only. No medical advice, no diagnosing, no treatments suggested here. Before you try anything that you hear about or learn about here, make sure that you check with your medical provider.
Welcome to the show, Brandy Gilmore. It is such a pleasure to meet you and to have you here today.
Likewise. I just absolutely love your energy and I'm so happy to be here.
Back at you. So for you guys, we met, I want to say 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago. I can't see the time.
But it's been a really great 10 or 15 minutes.
If you guys could have been in the room, like you'd be like, oh, crazy energy. So, sometimes you just meet someone and there we go.
You click. I love it.
I know. And so our biggest challenge on this podcast is going to be staying on track and not just having a girl chat, because that's all we really want to do. So we're going to talk about your super incredible story. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to invite everybody, if you haven't already done so, after listening to this podcast, head on over to the TED, and we'll have the link in the show notes. You need to watch this woman's TED Talk because it will blow you away. TED Talks are supposed to blow you away. I find some of them more blow awayable than others. This one is one of those ones that'll floor you. So number one, but you know, Brandy, why don't you like tell us a little bit about your background and the work that you do in the world today? And then we're just going to talk about your journey and all of the things that you learned, which I mean, just in talking to you for 10 minutes, I learned like 5 new terms I've never heard of before.
I love that. So my work in the world today is really about helping people to see that we can actually heal with the mind, because I would have previously thought it was impossible and ridiculous until I found myself in extreme pain, injured, neurological disorder, and the medical community told me there was nothing they could do. And I was there for years, and it just really was out of desperation. I went from that and then nerve ablations, infusions, injections, medical trials, diet, supplements, all of that stuff, magic potions from the Amazon. I mean, I was literally reaching for everything. When nothing else worked, I really started to understand my mind, and it's kind of mind blowing what we're capable of. And so, because I used to do network engineering and operations, I would have thought, oh, this is impossible. And so now it's been about showing it under medical equipment that we can get results. And so that's my passion.
Amazing. So let's open up the nutshell a little bit, because, you know, we can't just leave the podcast at that. I mean, that's just not enough information for people. So let's open up that nut and unpack some of what you talked about. So basically, you were going along your merry way, having a fabulous life as a systems engineer. Is that what you said?
Network operations engineer. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so one of those people that's super organized and has their shit together and does all the things, and an event happened, you got severely injured, and you ended up not able to walk on your own. Like, you ended up in a wheelchair. and in pain.
Yeah, I had a car accident, and then afterwards, I had a fall, and I fell just wrong, just right, however you want to say it. But yeah, I ended up overnight, went from living a full life to wheelchair walker cane. On a good day, I could get out with the wheelchair walker cane. On a bad day, I didn't make it out of bed. I had a lot of bad days on morphine for over 6.5 years. I was a mess. I was a train wreck.
And so at the time, basically you were like, okay, so my spine's not severed. My spinal cord isn't severed. My spine, you had visible physiological damage to nerves and like you had physical injuries. This wasn't just a situation of doctors saying it's all in your head. It's more doctors saying, yeah, there's all these things wrong with you and we don't know how to fix it, or we don't have the tools to fix it.
Yeah. Spinal end plate fractures, nerve lesions. One doctor described it in a way that like if you picture your discs as being like a soda can, like the soda can being crushed. So it's pinching the nerves,
pleasant.
And et cetera, et cetera. But then on top of that, you know, CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome, is like a even though you have certain injury, like a lot of time, what happens is then the nervous system then amplifies everything 100 times what you're experiencing. So you could even just like touch my skin and it would burn and hurt, just a soft touch.
Yeah.
And so it's this nerve pain, and it was a lot. It was
epic. And so, yeah. So the nervous system at this point is so pissed off. It's like, so I'm going to overreact to pretty much everything.
Yeah.
There is no limit to my rage, and I'm just going to release every time I get a stimulus. So how did you get to that place where, I mean, obviously you got you didn't get stonewalled, but you tried all the different things. You said you tried, you were in trials, like you tried all the, everything that conventional medicine would bring in front of you. You'd be like, all right, sign me up. Let's do this.
Anything, nerve ablations, infusions, injections, medications, you name it. A medical study, there was a trial experiment and I thought, okay, well, this is it. Cause that's what you kind of hope for. You know, I had been doing diet and supplements and even trying, you know, meditation and positive thinking and theta state. And because I was like, I don't care what the answer is. I just want to heal. I did. Mm-hmm. And so then this medical trial came up and I thought it was like, you know, that's what you hope is that somebody's going to invent something new and you get your life back. And I thought, oh my God, this is it. I felt like a kid counting down the days till Christmas. It was like, so like I was going to get my life back. And so finally the day comes, they wheel me in my wheelchair into the hospital. I'm laying in the hospital bed, just thinking about all the things I'm going to do, where I'm going to go, you know, all the friends I'm going to see. And the doctor, he comes in and he just has this look on his face. And I knew something was wrong. And he said, you know, you actually can't be a part of the study. We don't expect that you're actually going to get better. I've re-reviewed your chart and we don't expect it. You're going to get better. And in that moment, I felt like I swallowed a tennis ball. It was like everything that I had hoped for just kind of crushed. And the next memory I have, I'm laying in my bed and I don't want to live. I mean, I'm laying there, I'm in extreme pain and I'm just like, what is the point? I cannot live the rest of my life like this. And then I just had this thought that came into my head. That was like, well, what about the placebo? You know, it's a known fact that the placebo worked. And it was just this voice or thought in my head. And it sent me, it was like, well, you can't give up if there's still some type of hope. Wait a second, wait, like, hold up here. You can't just die or want to die if there's still hope. And it sent me down this journey of understanding how the placebo worked and why it worked and the mind and neuroscience and trying to understand what I could do to heal my body.
Wow. Okay. So then what? Because placebo by definition is you are in a double blind study and you don't know if you're getting the medication or you're not getting the medication. And placebo is the person who's not getting the medication who miraculously gets better, even though they're not getting the medication. So their mind believed that they were getting the medication and therefore they embody this effect and they heal or get better or experience the benefits of whatever that intervention is in spite of not getting the intervention, right? Like,
exactly. So I thought after that, okay, well, I just have to believe. Let me just believe I'm already healed. So I like went on this thing of believing and affirmations and writing and chanting. And I mean, I was like, okay, if it's all about belief, well, then I'm going to do that.
I'm in. Yeah.
I'm in. I can do this. And I was like forcing myself so much. I felt like I was going crazy. I had like multiple realities, and still in both realities and all realities, I was still really in a lot of pain and very injured. And then I came across this thing called the open label placebo, which is where it's open label. Both the doctor and the patient both know it is fake, and it still works. And I was like, wait, WTF, how is this even possible?
How is that possible?
Well, that's the thing, is that there's other factors that when you start to look at what is belief? Well, if you believe in something, there's an emotional shift. And so, and not only that, but then even if you think about the placebo, it has been shown that the doctor-patient relationship can have huge impacts. So there's a lot of different emotional factors underneath, which I didn't realize at that time, but then I started looking at like anomalies. For example, so I thought, okay, well, here's a whole open label placebo. What else am I missing? And I went on this like journey of figuring out, okay, spontaneous remission. People can get better from incurable illnesses for no reason at all. And I thought, wait a second here. So then I started looking at multiple personality disorder, also known as DID, dissociative identity disorder, that people with different personalities can have different ailments in different personalities. They can have asthma in one and allergies in another, back pain in one, headaches in a different one, blind in one personality, not in another one. There was a well-known case of a woman who was blind literally in some personalities, but not in others. And I thought, wait a second. And I really thought at that time, gosh, I need a personality that's pain-free because this is...
I need a new personality. What the hell? May as well go out and get one. Yeah.
Yeah. which was the mindset. And by the way, just to be clear, anybody who does have MPD or, you know, deals with that, I have absolute compassion. But that was my thinking. I was just like, I was frustrated. I was like, well, you know, but what it highlighted for me was that there was different illnesses with different mindsets, because it was consistent also. Like if the personality Jane continuously had back pain, but then the personality, you know, Alice continuously had allergies or asthma, it started to highlight the awareness that different mindsets were with different illnesses. And that was really profound, because at the time I was studying everything. It was everything. I mean, I was taking a ton of diet, you know, changing my diet and supplement. I didn't care where the answer was. And so at the same time, I was also studying energy and biophotons and MPD and everything to try to figure out just what would work to heal.
Yeah. So MPD basically highlights to you the possibility that the same body with a different mindset can experience, have completely different physical experiences.
Yes. And that things that are quote unquote incurable could actually not be exist. Like blind, like, you know, blindness personality, but not in another, asthma, it was not only that, but it was that and also incurable conditions could actually disappear.
Okay. So then what? First of all, what's an open label placebo study? Is that where it's like the doctor and the patient both know we're going to, like, how do you do an open label placebo? Because placebo, by definition, you're not supposed to know.
Exactly. That's it. So with the open label placebo, like there was one that was done. There's so many. There's some on IBS. There's so many that have been done. It's actually a growing area of interest. But it's basically where it's like one script from one study was basically like, look, this is just a fake pill. But other people have taken it before and they've been able to get some benefits from it. And here, we recommend you try it and see if you can get some benefits from it also. It's kind of like the gist of it. Mm-hmm. And this is like the initial one that was from researchers at Johns Hopkins. And so they did this and people in the study were continuing to get results, to feel better. And there's been studies on IBS, same thing, where there's actual physical improvement. And this is why I would say that it is. Is what I've figured out is, long story short, is I started looking at emotions and I said, well, I'm, you know, my condition was severe. So I was thinking, you know, first and foremost, emotions can't really heal me. I mean, I have a really bad injury.
I'm really messed up. Yeah. And I hurt.
Train wreck. Yeah. Like, how are emotions going to heal my physical injury? And I thought, okay, but how can I see that that our mind affects the physical body? Okay, emotions. And I thought, okay, well, if somebody's embarrassed, their face turns red, nervous stomach. Okay, we know that. Anxiety. Okay, we know that. You know, panic attack, sexual thoughts, sexual physical response. Okay, we're all aware of that. And I thought, well, how much can emotions really affect the physical body? And then I started looking at things like the widowhood effect, where a senior can lose a spouse and actually die, or even scared to death, where somebody can be so scared, their heart suddenly stops. And I thought, wow, okay, well, emotions can affect us to the point of death. Okay, well, let's look at them a little bit more seriously. Now, one, I think one of the complications with them is that, you know, we know stress affects the physical body. We know that with psychoneuroimmunology, we know that it can affect the white blood cells. Mm-hmm. So we know that there's research that has linked emotions to cancer, or type 2 diabetes, lonely, there's a connection with loneliness, or, you know, there's so many things, or even longevity. People who are happier, more positive, have about a 15% longer lifespan. And so we know this, it's woven throughout. And what I started to realize was this, is that it takes like a certain combination of emotions. So in other words, we can see that there are people who are stressed, who are sick. And there are also people who are stressed, who have things like PTSD, and who are not necessarily physically sick. And the way I started to look at it was the awareness that it's like a recipe, if you will. It's like, if you want to make cake and you have flour, well, you can't make cake, but if you add, you know, eggs and butter, or vegan eggs and butter and yada, 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 now you can make cake. Of course, illness is not like cake, but point being is that there's just different ingredients of different recipes. And so somebody with multiple personality, you know, it was like different ingredients in the mindset. And so it was like a combination of certain emotions. Mm-hmm. And that's what I started to realize. And so that was a key in starting to then go, okay, well, what specific emotions could be impacting my body? So it was that. It was, I mean, there was so much research also as far as, you know, post-surgical studies, as far as even after surgery. Somebody who is more optimistic is going to heal. They mm-hmm. studies have shown they heal faster, better cellular proliferation increased. And people who are fearful and stress, they have a lot higher rehospitalization complications, et cetera.
Right. And don't believe they can get better. Isn't there a story somewhere about a guy who was given a wrong diagnosis by his doctor and died, even though he actually didn't have that condition?
I've seen a couple. I've heard a couple of those stories.
You're never sure if they're urban myths or not, but I know that I've heard it in a couple of circles that leads me to believe that maybe it's not that much of an urban myth, but definitely, you know, there's a story, and I, you know what, I should research it, and I'll talk about it in the show notes if I find it. But there is definitely a story about a person who was given a misdiagnosis and told they only had X amount of time to live, and basically on cue, didn't live. And at the same token, a lot of people get given a 3 months to live and 5 years later. And that's the radical remission stories that you're talking about, where, and there was actually a book written, and specifically, I think it was around cancer. And the researcher at the end compiled 9 traits or 9 factors that she found was common amongst all these people that doctors had just said, well, they're outliers. We can't explain why they're still alive. So, you know, we're going to throw that folder off into the corner here somewhere, as opposed to saying, well, wait, let's take a look and see what these people are doing that nobody else is doing. And a lot of them, and there was very little, to your point, there were very little supplements and gadgets and medicines. It was all community, getting rid of toxic relationships, getting out of toxic jobs. You know, it was all these, what we would call almost intangibles or soft things that shouldn't make a life and death difference in your life, and yet did.
Right. That's exactly. And that's what I found in my work is okay. So optimism, we know optimism helps speed up cellular proliferation. So it's speeding up the body's repair. So it's like, okay, well, that's one factor. Is a person really optimistic? Now, a lot of times people will identify as being an optimist, but not wholly feel it. Like even during my interview, I identified as being an optimist. was I in a lot of fear? Did I look at my, like, so I had all of these underlying fears. So was I really not really, but I identified as being one. Like, I was optimistic, but not wholly, you know?
But you had an inner belief. You must have had an inner belief somewhere deep down inside that didn't accept that this was going to be you somehow, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. But at the same time, so I was also looking at post-surgical results. And when you think about it for a moment, if somebody who's in fear or stress heals slower and somebody who's optimistic heals faster, was I emotionally optimistic? So mentally, I was determined.
Yeah.
I was in a lot of fear. And I also had my subconscious emotions and frustrations and hurt and heaviness and all of these emotions. Like, yeah, I was stressed, but I was still simultaneously optimistic. So it's kind of like, you know, if somebody says, well, they love their partner and then they're also resentful or angry underneath, it's like, well, both exist. And so, I would say, was I optimistic? I would say I went through times of not wanting to live and up and down and all around. And, it was determination. I couldn't live the way that I was living.
Yeah. And so how did you do that? Like, did you do this by yourself? Was there someone who helped you along in this journey? Like, is there a person, a doctor, a friend, a sister, like somebody who shared your deep belief that there must be a way or there must be another way?
You know, not really. I mean, I really went inside, but there were amazing people. My brother came and stayed with me for a while. I had a stepsister that came and stayed with me and helped me for a while. I had, various people who helped me out. I had a physical therapist who would come over to my house and tape me with kinesio tape to try to help my pain lessen, and like tape me from the back of my neck to like my feet of different tapes and all of these things. And so she was at least looking outside of the box for answers. Also, the best physical therapist that I could have possibly had, she cared, and was really thoughtful. And then she left because she went off to go have her beautiful daughter. And it's funny, cause actually after I got better, her and I went skiing together. It was like, wow. Yeah, it was so sweet. Cause she moved away actually in the middle of my injury. And when I got better, I was like, she periodically checked in, how are you doing? And I was like, I'm getting better. And so when I got better, we actually went kayaking. And then, that was like our first thing. And then 2 years later we went skiing, and she's like, it's just kind of like an epic full circle thing.
That is very cool. Okay. So we're still in that place where now it's the light's going on. You're like, okay, so there's all these other instances in the world. How do you make that leap? Or what was that time when you knew you were kind of onto something where maybe for 5 minutes you didn't feel pain? Or how did that transition sort of start to happen?
I think one thing was really pivotal, because I've been doing like the meditation and the binaural beats and the phantom face frequency and the all of the mind programming stuff, and it wasn't working. I had been doing it for like years and theta state. And something that was pivotal for me is that I had a friend, her aunt was in the process of dying from lung cancer. Okay. And so she had picked me up to go and took me over to her aunt's house to say, you know, say goodbye. And she had been in, you know, in and out of consciousness for quite a few weeks. And, you know, and I felt compassion for the situation. And then I had this epiphany. I thought, gosh, that's what I probably look like during the day, because I was literally meditating and trying to get into this deep state of meditation and theta state all day. And I thought, okay, I need to do something radically different, because if this was so healing, then why isn't she healing? And it just really kind of jolted me. I thought, I have to do something very different. And so that was a huge pivot for me. And I started really just working on radical programming, like, okay, let me amplify my emotions and let me create a real shift. Now, what was profound about that is that our emotions also control our consciousness. So kind of a simple way to say that is this, is it, you know, if have you ever done this before? You're really, really, really in love and you just can't stop thinking about the person, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe another time, like people will tend to get maybe really pissed off or they have an argument and it's like your brain kind of hijacks your thoughts and you can't stop thinking about it, right?
You keep talking about it in your brain. You have these conversations.
Yeah. And then you go, okay, I'm just going to let it go. And then you, next thing you know, your brain's back on it. And you're like, but I told you, brain, just let it go. Right. And it does. Yeah. Our brains do this at a deeper level. So if we have fear or we have anger or hurt or wounding, our brain, it controls what we see. We're like, we don't see love in somebody on purpose. It's how we're feeling, or anger. We don't do it on purpose. We try to change our brains away from it. And so point being is what I started realizing is that to make a shift in consciousness, to make a radical shift, I wanted to amplify emotions. Just like if somebody went from feeling angry to feeling love, and then their brain automatically started working in that way where it started seeing love. So I really started amplifying my emotions. So I didn't just change the way I felt. Yes. And I programmed it, but I also made it really strong to then shift my consciousness, if that makes sense.
Okay. So because we say that our subconscious really runs the show.
Yes.
And the words that we speak inform our subconscious of what we really want. It's part of the reason why people say, don't talk shit about yourself. Because, you know, like if you say, I am a loser.
Saying, don't talk shit about yourself.
What?
Don't get me wrong. I like it.
Yeah, but if you say, I'm a loser, I can't do math, I don't do that, I can't. These are stories we tell ourselves, and our subconscious is sitting there going, all right, that's a story. We're going to have to deliver on
it. Is this a Canadian thing, though? I just have to ask.
No, it's not.
Shit about yourself. I really like it.
I do have a potty mouth. I tried really hard not to drop the F-bomb on my podcast.
I get it. And we said, okay, we were going to stay on track because we could talk all day. Yeah. I'll bring it back.
Yes. So basically, but is it part of it's accessing that subconscious to deliver a different message.
Exactly. And if we were going to be kind of a bit more technical about it, what I was looking at also was like repetition compulsion or reenactments or Freud's work or whatnot, where we look at when we have some type of deeper programming, especially, you know, we've all heard patterns from childhood, they breed more of the same. You know, if we use the example of a woman with an abusive father can leave him and find the abusive boyfriend, boss, spouse, et cetera, et cetera. So not only do we think in a different way, but we can also attract or manifest in a different way. You know, these patterns, which might sound a bit woo-woo, but we can see it written throughout psychology, even in attachment theory, or even if we look outside of psychology and we look at, you know, as I was doing research, you know, even if we look at crime statistics, we can see that people who go through the most amount of victimhood in their childhood can actually re-experience that even statistically. Without psychology, even attract the same type. They have a lot higher percentage chance of experiencing
victim. Yeah.
Re-victimization.
Mm-hmm. So a little bit like when we say, oh, that person is so lucky, or this person is so unlucky. It's a little bit of that, right?
Exactly.
That person just always seems to have terrible things happen to them. And it's not that they want terrible things to happen to them. They just seem to randomly. And yet somehow there's like an energetic pattern that just keeps repeating somehow.
Exactly. And they're not talking shit about themselves. And that's so that too, but yeah, the pattern.
And that, well, actually probably they are. I'm so not lucky, right? I'm so unlucky. I just can't win.
Exactly. And then it gets reinforced. And so what I love about healing with the mind is exactly that. Is it, you know, kind of taking it back to MPD or DID, you know, the multiple personalities, is that there's patterned ways of thinking that we have. And so when it comes to healing, kind of the point of emphasizing that it does take real change is it's not just positive thinking and meditation didn't work for me. Theta state didn't work for me. But when I really said, okay, what are these patterns that are going on at a deeper level? How do I change those and really address those? That's when it was pivotal. And so both I started taking the positive and really programming it in really strong. Now, a lot of people will think, you know, a lot of people do thinking positive. Mm-hmm. The problem with thinking positive is it takes a lot of effort. And not only that, but if we think about how our brains work, it works in patterns. So mm-hmm. I thought, well, okay, well, if we know there's negative patterns, well, why don't I start creating positive patterns? So then my brain just starts doing that automatically. And so that was one thing, was creating positive emotional patterning and thinking in terms of patterns. Instead of just thinking positive about everything, yes, I want to think positive about everything, but let me purposely create positive neural pathways. And so I started really amplifying that and then looking at the specific patterns and getting rid of those.
So when you were creating new neural pathways, and I totally get that, like there's that expression of neurons that fire together. So, you know, you've got certain neural pathways that are very entrenched. And now you're saying, okay, I want to do it differently. Were you doing them directly about, I don't hurt or I don't feel pain? Or like, was it that literal, or was it more, I'm having such a great day? Like
almost. Okay. So this is the thing, right? So optimism, speeding up mm-hmm. cellular proliferation, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I really need to feel optimistic, not just think optimistic. I need to feel that way. And so one of the things that I did is I started listening to U2, Beautiful Day. You know, it's a beautiful day. Don't let it slip away. Now, here I was in all this pain on morphine going, it's a beautiful day. Don't let it slip away. And when I started feeling that way, I did not feel like life was beautiful at all when no. I was initially started. But what I would do is I would literally just not think of anything. And I would amplify those emotions and feel them as strong as I possibly could for no reason and every reason. So it was really about like, kind of like if you're going to memorize the alphabet, but instead I was purposely amplifying emotions to create them over and over. Now, by the way, we've all heard about a happy playlist. This was not that. It was because a happy playlist doesn't create positive neural pathways. It's just a lot of, you know, working on happiness. So I knew it's like the alphabet changing every day. None of us would know it. Or even, you know, a wedding song. When people hear their wedding song, what happens? They melt to that song because those emotions are stored up. But if they had 50 or 100 different wedding songs, then it wouldn't have the same effect.
Power.
And so it was really, yeah. So it was about, okay, well, let me use this song like a wedding song, but and amplify it. So it starts creating an automatic way of feeling inside of me. So for a few reasons, because one, for me to all of a sudden be able to access new positive emotions really strong would have been, like jumping over the rainbow. Where I was mentally, and part of the problem is to create a new neural pathway, we have to feel the same thing over and over and over and over again. Just like if we're doing the alphabet, if we do it once a month, good luck. It's going to be hard to really memorize that as a child. And so it was like, okay, well, how do I get my nervous system to feel this? And how do I access these emotions of positivity every day when I'm in such a really bad place in my life? And so that's what I did. It was kind of like, don't think, just start getting access to these emotions. And so that was a pivotal place. And as I did, I started feeling better. And then, I mean, it was also about releasing trauma and negativity that I had that I didn't realize that I had that was surrounding 9/11. And so that was something that had also impacted me, and I didn't even consciously realize it.
And how did you realize it? Did you work with someone on this, like a mirror? Like how do I'm like fascinated because I'm sitting here thinking when I'm having a crap day, I'm having a crap day, and you cannot talk me out of my crap day unless I do something like, I don't know. I have to shock myself out of it, right? Like I have to have a great workout, or like I have to change my state.
Does that mean we should shock you? I'm just
No. Okay. No, not physically shock. but physically shock like in the sense like change my state, right?
Yeah.
So and you have to be willing to, you have to want to, because when you're all woe is me and feeling kind of crappy and you've got good reasons for feeling crappy, you don't want to, you're like, leave me alone. Like I feel crappy. I have good reasons for feeling crappy. And in your case, you're like, I hurt. Like, here's the thing. I hurt. I can't do what I want to do. I don't want to be doing what I'm doing. So I have all good reasons to be in this current state. And yet you were able to consistently. And I'm wondering if you chunk, you know, like when we have a gargantuan task in front of us, it's really hard to get to the, to imagine the finish line and get there. And so sometimes it's easier to kind of chunk it down into little bitty steps. And if you're rebuilding a neural pathway, is it possible that you were just kind of going at it one piece at a time?
I would say this. I would say my thoughts scared me because it was like my brain was on autopilot wanting to exit life.
Right.
I would say that a trash truck would drive by and I would think to myself, could I get in my wheelchair and push it in front of the trash truck and then just be done? My brain, what's that?
That's a problem. Yeah.
That's a problem. And then not only that, but then I would think, well, no, I couldn't do that because then the poor guy, his family, and then not only that, but then on my tombstone is going to say died by trash truck. And that's just not going to be great. I mean, my brain would like, so I was at a place of, I need to, like, I was like, okay, I just need to lift. I needed to get my head above water.
Yeah.
Now, and that's why I always tell people to lift and bring in the positive first, is for that very reason, is the more that I did, the more that I could see even with more clarity. And it's kind of like this, is that, you know, if somebody's really, 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 really upset and you try to reason with them, it doesn't typically go so well.
No.
But if they start to calm down, then you can reason with them. And that's what I call is accessing resourceful consciousness. So we can our minds become more resourceful. And so by starting to then shift my mindset into the positive, and then I created like little techniques that I could do with my mind and like brushing down on negative emotions and kind of started to work with my mind in a different way that I could then see with more clarity. And it was like my brain became more resourceful to get the information.
Wow. And so did you get better little by little, or did you have a watershed moment? Like, was there an epiphany at some point that kind of went, whoa, okay, we've got this, like things are shifting?
There was epiphanies. Yeah. There was like, I would get stuck and then I didn't know why. I would say a combination of all of that, because at this point, number one, I didn't even know if it could work. Yeah. You know, and so, I mean, I've been healed now. I mean, my injury was 20 years ago. And so I have been healed now since 2010. So,
wow. Okay.
So at the time I was figuring this out and the idea of healing with the mind was very new to me. I was figuring it out and I had a lot of different epiphanies along the way. Yes. I had this moment where all of a sudden, like I shifted my pain and I felt hugely better. So much so I went to like my neighbor's house and she and I had been working on, like I had started working on walking with no cane. And I told her, I said, if you ever drive up and you see two legs sticking out of the bushes, those are mine. Come help me out. But, and it was great. She was 72 at the time. So she would go walking with me and all of these things. And there was this point also where I forgot, it sounds so silly, but I forgot that we could kneel on our knees. And I realized it, something dropped and I went to go pick it up and I was able to do that. And that was another moment. And then like, I kissed the ground crying. I mean, there was all of these silly little things along the way, but I would say that it just like the combination of emotions and really then addressing those was pivotal. It was just, I was so determined to just get better. And yeah, as my pain started going down, it was like, oh my gosh, I feel better. And then there was this point where I didn't have it all worked out. So then my pain would be better and I would be feeling really, really good. And then something would trigger and I didn't even know. And suddenly like, ah, and it would all shoot back through my body. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. It was a process, but I would say just the combination of that. And, it's so hard. That's why it sounds impossible or whatnot. And so that's why when I got better, I said, okay, look, I'm going to show people under medical equipment so they can really actually see it. And that's what I love, is that you can literally see somebody, like, so say somebody has neck pain, okay, and under medical thermography, let's say they have neck pain. And what happens on the scan, if you've ever seen thermography, is, you know, somebody's on the scan, their neck will be all red. And then I'll literally coach them to use their mind to shift their specific thoughts. So I help them identify the specific thoughts and emotions that they're feeling that are affecting that. And you literally in real time see the scan turn from red to green as their pain goes away.
That's crazy. So now you're a coach in this world.
So yes. I coach people, but I have programs that people go through. I love empowerment where people can feel empowered to learn. I feel like everybody should know how to use their mind. So yeah. So I am, but I have a lot of people go through like a course and show people also, I'm driven to even show it under medical equipment. And so that's also what drives me. Yeah.
Hey folks, how badly do you want more healthy years? Look, we're not just after a longer life. We're after the ability to do the things that we love in our 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond. An Inside Tracker can help you optimize your health span so that you live healthier for longer. How? Well, they do this by providing personalized plans that are based on your body's data. Inside Tracker tests your blood, your DNA, and can even sync with your fitness tracker and then provide clear science-backed recommendations like nutrition, exercise, supplementation, and lifestyle. I've recently done my Inside Tracker testing and I love it. It's really helped me to dial in even things about when to have a rest day to improve recovery, and it's really helped me to hone in on how well I might be fueling my body. Inside Tracker recently even added hormone testing to their plan, which already includes markers like ApoB, the heart health indicator, vitamin D, magnesium, cortisol. It includes 47 biomarkers. Imagine that. Now, you can also test your DNA and even get your inner age, which is a biological age calculation, along with recommendations on how to lower that inner age. Inside Tracker is running a special deal for Biohacking Superhuman Performance listeners. All you have to do is go to InsideTracker.com and use code NIDDAM, N-I-D-D-A-M, to save 20%. Let's get back to the show.
I mean, it's almost like you're the person that got lost in the jungle and you used your own machete to kind of hack your way through. And now you're kind of like saying, okay, it's a rough path, but I can help you through it. I can, you know.
Yeah, I would
maybe shine light and like, are you able to help guide people through this stuff? Because let's face it, what you did is remarkable. There aren't too many people on this planet who can even just keep the faith, right? Like hang on to that belief in the face of what you were dealing with on a 24/7 basis. To hold on to belief, especially when the entire medical establishment is telling you, not only are they telling you that you're not actually going to get better, but they're giving you good reasons why you can't. Like it's different even than if they said, look, on paper, you look perfect, but we don't know why you're having pain. So then that would be one thing, but you had like nerve ablation, like you had physical things going on with you that kind of explained or, you know, could explain the pain. And yet you still were able to have the belief and the fortitude and the commitment to an idea.
Well, I think that's the thing. I think that it was because I became addicted to research. And I literally felt like on the days that I didn't research, I felt like I didn't, like they were hard. They were heavy. I had no hope. And so if I just kept researching, then at least it was like my lifeline. If I found out very quickly, if I took a couple of days off from researching, I was in a bad place. So it became my addiction, really. Researching for some
kind of kept you moving forward kind of thing.
Yeah. And then all of the anomalies, I think if I didn't find the anomalies of MPD and all of these, like those gave me hope to see that there was some type of possibility and that none of this stuff made logical sense. And also biophotons, finding those, the awareness that our bodies actually emit energy and biophotons, it was profound. And yet what's fascinating is that the man who discovered this in the 1920s was nominated for the Nobel Prize 11 times. And also won a USSR. There was another thing also that I had read that was published in the Smithsonian from 1955 that said that 98% of the atoms in the body are renewed every year. And I remember thinking that, and that was something I literally woke up with every day and thought, if 98% of the atoms are renewed every year, then why is my body still injured? So it was all of the, I'm a logical person. I'm extremely logical. And so it maybe to a fault logical, like one plus one needs to equal two. And if it doesn't, something's fishy. And I want to know why it didn't. And so
you'd like be so fun to get into an argument with. Oh my God.
Right? It sounds like it just, if things don't make sense, it's like it fries my brain. It's like if something just does not add up, I'm like, but why? And that's because, I mean, I used to do troubleshooting, network engineering and operations. I did, and I was very good at it. And so logic. And so when all of those anomalies, it made my brain say, but what is there? Mm-hmm. And so, so I think it was that also really kept me going.
Yeah. So let's talk about biophotons. You brought it up. This is, we're now getting into the realm of energy and energy medicine. And we were talking about before the podcast, like maybe biophotons have something to do with people's auras, or what other people define as auric fields. But let's talk a little bit about your discovery of biophotons and how that played in. And I mean, this idea that your atoms renew every, 7 years? So theoretically, you should almost be able to heal from pretty much any injury after 7 years. Theoretically.
You would think. And even, and this in the Smithsonian, and I mean, I could give you the link. It's from Time Magazine and it's published in the Smithsonian. And it was actually saying every year that all the, that 98% of the atoms renew. And so it was interesting. And so, but it was just something that I woke up, like every, that stuck in my head. And then when I also saw that, you know, that our bones are constantly renewing and remodeling and all of these things. And it just didn't make sense. How is it possible then for somebody to have that old football injury from high school 40 years later? And so looking at the renewal rate, it just was like, well, why doesn't the body heal? And so, and then it was also fascinating looking at like the homunculus map and that was, and understanding that every part of the brain is connected to every single part of the body. So that's what also led me to the brain as well. But as far as biophotons.
And then we're going back to the homunculus map, just because people need to know what that is for people who don't. So start with biophotons. Yes.
Start with biophotons. Okay. So it's so crazy because when you look in our world right now, a lot of people think that energy is just a woo-woo thing. Mm-hmm. And the truth of it is that our cells actually emit photons. And to just break it down for a moment, photons are little particles of light. So a light bulb emits photons, the sun emits photons, and our bodies emit photons, and they're called biophotons. Now, when they were actually discovered, they were actually called mitogenetic radiation. They also have gone by another name called ultra weak photon emissions. And there are actually studies in a shared database of the Smithsonian, that Harvard and the Smithsonian and NASA have this shared database. And there are actually studies also of biophotons in this database. So they are medically proven, documented for 100 years now. Mm-hmm. Now, what's fascinating about them? So technically, Alexander Gerswich, who initially is the one who discovered them, who was nominated for all of these Nobel Prizes and even won a USSR prize, what he showed was that this light energy could impact cellular proliferation. And there's been studies throughout the years. So basically taking how he did it was basically the biophotons from one onion root onto another onion root. And the cells in that specific area that was that were receiving the biophotons, the light energy, basically there were more in mitosis. So there were more in cellular proliferation and kind of to break cellular proliferation down very easily. An easy way to think about it is our cells are always growing, dividing. A simple way to picture it would be to think about dish soap. If you pour soap in and then it creates all these bubbles, our bodies are constantly
making bubbles,
growing and dividing, making bubbles. We're blowing bubbles all day.
Yeah. We're just a bunch of bubbles.
A bunch of bubbles, and just we'll just have to remember that.
Okay. So we'll
and then you just want
concept.
Your bubbles to heal. So it was just very fascinating that this light energy can actually influence cellular proliferation. Now, when you stop and think about it for a moment, there's a few things. Is that if we know that this light energy can influence cell proliferation and that cell proliferation is involved in healing and illness, then I was like, well, wait a second. Why are we not looking at this? If we know this is medically documented, and there are even studies that show that people who have diabetes have a different type of photon emission, they have different patterns of biophotons than people who don't, or cancer cells have different biophoton emissions than non-cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
Even there's studies in mice. I don't know if there's been a human studies yet, but people in like rheumatoid arthritis, like different inflammation type, there's different biophoton emissions. What's also interesting is emotions. When somebody's feeling angry, that changes biophoton emissions, or even visualizing. There was a study where participants were visualizing white light and they had increased biophoton emissions out of the right side of their head, but not the left side of their head. And so point being is it was like, well, wait a second. If we know that biophoton emissions are linked to illness and different illnesses have different biophoton emissions, and we know that biophotons can impact cellular proliferation, and proliferation is important for wound healing, for, you know, post-surgical healing, for all everything. We know cell proliferation is a critical aspect to healing and to illness. You know, even if you think about cancers, abnormal cell proliferation.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it was like, well, wait a second. If we know this, why aren't we using it? If there are even studies in the Smithsonian about biophotons, and we know that, why aren't we using it? And this is the thing, is it's a rapidly growing area of interest, and there are more and more studies. In fact, there was a new study, I think, posted in the Smithsonian as soon as yesterday on biophotons. I was just looking at it. And so there are more and more and more studies. Now, the problem is of course, a few things. A lot of medical research from foundational medical research was done on cadavers that are
not going to be emitting much in the way of biophotons.
You know, good call. Good call. They're
just
no,
saying
there's no bubbles,
no bubbles.
But yeah, so they don't emit light energy. Then the other thing is of course to test biophotons, it requires a photomultiplier tube. So it's like, it's kind of interesting. I've been in labs that show that testing of biophotons and all of that. And it's literally like being in either like a bank vault or like a freezer, if you will, where you go in and it's like a huge vault and it's completely dark inside. And it has to be, because if you think about it, any photons from any lights would interfere with the results. So you actually have to be in all dark.
Mm-hmm.
And so most studies, you know, if somebody does a study on Vicodin or not, or Vioxx or any medication or not, then Vioxx was a medication that I was on, mm-hmm. why it came to mind, but it's off the market now. But anyway, point being is that we know that biophotons emit from the body, but it's not in any of these tests. And the fact that we know that they actually communicate information throughout the body, there are research studies that show that they even communicate homeostasis throughout the body. The problem is we can't bottle them. And what are we going to do? Sell people biophotons? So we can't bottle them.
But we can influence them. You said, if you think of white light.
Exactly. So there are studies that show different emotions, like somebody in anger has increased biophoton emissions. Somebody who's feeling more calm decreases biophoton emissions. And there's a direct correlation. Research has shown that there's a direct correlation between the thoughts and emotions and biophoton emissions. And again, visualizing white light. So there's one study after another that has shown this. And so, and it's a rapidly growing area of you know, of, there's, again, more and more and more research. And so that's where I got to the point. As I said, well, if this light, it's not necessarily white, it's invisible. But it would be cool if we were all walking around emitting white light, you know?
Well, some people glow, right? Some people, you'll hear people say about certain people that they glow.
You glow.
Oh, well, you thank glow. You. Well, it could be the light, but
could it but, could
you
be.
Know, but and I had a friend who would say this about certain little kids. She'd say, you know, there are certain kids that have a light about them. And maybe she was talking figuratively, not literally, but very often these figurative expressions actually kind of like where there's smoke, where there's fire, right? Like they come from somewhere.
Exactly. I agree. And you know, what's funny is even if you think about throughout history, angels having a white halo over their head and absolutely.
Yeah.
So I would absolutely agree. I think we as human beings have the ability to learn to see them. It's just about understanding how to
tapping into it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, dogs can hear a pitch or a sound that humans can't. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like we have, a lot more abilities than we as humans believe that we do. Intuition, channeling information, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's been
100%. So you learned about biophotons and now you were able to, so the concept of biophotons really brought home to you the idea that there's constant renewal happening in the body at the smallest little level. And so if there's constant renewal, this must mean that there's a possibility to heal.
Yeah, the constant renewal wasn't another thing without like, yeah. So yes, constant renewal, it was everything pointing at the mind. It was the placebo points at the mind has some type of ability. NPD pointed at the ability, biophotons, the fact that we could influence them and they could affect cellular proliferation. And there's even studies that show that they can deform also. So in other words, like fish eggs that have where biophotons have been measured, they can actually deform. They can cause increased growth, they could stop growth, or they can deform growth from biophotons, this light energy. And so the fact that it could have all of these abilities to influence growth and healing was profound. And I thought, okay, well, they've now been around 100 years and nobody really knows about them except for if you start looking at this research or in the Smithsonian database or in you look deeper or the Nobel Prize and you start actually looking deeper, you find they're just hard to test. So they haven't, they're not, you know, most researchers don't choose to then test them.
Yeah.
And so as I saw like everything pointing at the mind, that's when I said, okay, I need to take emotions a lot more seriously. And that's what said, okay, look, let me see if this can work. Let me change my mindset. Let me do that. And so that's, it was just a determination to say, okay, I'm going to change my mindset. I'm going to do this.
Wow. 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 Okay. And so
I know it's, by the way,
the homunculus map, we have to go back to the human. I promised everybody by saying it that we were going to go back to the homunculus map, which I think is that, was it discovered by Professor Homunculus? Is that where the name comes from? Because that's a fascinating word.
I like that. Homunculus means kind of like little man, little diagram.
Okay. All right. But It's a thing.
But it should be Mr. Homunculus, Dr.
So like it's basically it. you've got the representation of your whole physical body in your brain. And I know this because if they would insert an electrode here, something over there would move and so on and so forth.
Exactly. Spot right. on. So Boldrew and Penfield, yeah, neurosurgeons, basically that's exactly what they did. They stimulated different parts of the brain and it affected different parts of the body. If they stimulated one part, like, you know, the insular cortex, basically somebody could feel nauseous or feel or vomiting or, you know, and so different parts affected different parts of the physical body. And so that was another piece that I said, okay, well, what if, kind of like I called it an emotional stroke, if you will, you know, where a stroke, somebody can have a stroke and it can affect, you know, if they have a right brain stroke, it affects the left brain or left part of the body, or left brain, it affects the right side. And I thought, well, what if emotions are just happening in different parts of the brain? And then that means in turn, they're triggering certain things in the brain that they're then are affecting different parts of the body. So again, it was just literally looking at it when every anomaly from placebo to multiple personalities, to open label placebo, to nocebo, where we could get negative results, to biophotons, our mind being able to influence biophotons, to stress, to psychoneuroimmunology. It was just everything collectively saying, the missing piece to healing is here. Let's figure it out. And so then I boiled it down to, okay, look, let me just then get serious about emotions and figure out how I can decode them in a way that then can get out of these patterns. So then it became, okay, well, let me understand Freud's work and repetition compulsion and understand how patterns, our brain has patterned ways of thinking. And let me then address those and shift those.
And so is the idea that those emotional patterns somehow were affecting a portion of the brain that was driving the pain and you kind of, and it gets stuck there. Cause I remember there's a book written by a doctor in Toronto. I think his name is Norman Doidge, and it's called The Brain's Way of Healing. Have you ever come across it?
I have not.
So it's a series of short stories of different people's work in different areas that were transformational and completely non-conventional. And there's this one guy whose name I don't remember because it's been a long time since I read the book, who's doing work with pain in people, like people who are suffering from chronic excruciating pain, probably not dissimilar to yours. And it started with him because he was that person. If I remember correctly, he did some kind of brain imaging that he could literally see patterns in the brain where this short circuit maybe was happening and expressing itself as pain in different parts of the body. And he was teaching people to basically kind of reverse engineer a resolution of that short circuit. I'm going to have to find the book. I'll send it to you. We'll do a book exchange. Because I think that, I mean, they don't talk about placebo. They don't talk about multiple personality. Like they don't talk about any, like you've articulated and defined and discovered your own language in this space. Right. And it's interesting that, you know, there might be other people that have defined it in a different way, but at the end of the day, it comes down to the same thing. It comes down to the power of the mind getting stuck in, and the brain maybe getting trapped in a certain pathology that expresses physically and that can in some ways be resolved, not with a medicine, not with a tool, but exactly. By addressing it.
Exactly. And I would say some of it comes from a little bit of a different angle.
Yeah.
So yes, same. In some ways. So kind of like this, there's like a placebo analgesia, right? Which is basically like we can create dopamine levels or biochemicals that can help us to feel less pain, which can be great, but then don't necessarily enable the body to heal. So it can be like a cover up, if you will. And so I would say that a lot of times what I see when people do a type of pain relief through mindset is more so trying to trigger those. And I would say that I think that the difference is that with the work that I do, it's also about understanding that different emotions affect the body differently. For example, like I've had people, like one woman I worked with was bedridden for almost 8 years, and she had, part of what she also had is low blood volume. So her body did not make enough blood. Okay. So she caught tachycardia. Yeah. So if you sit up, heart rate goes up, 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 and then you pass out So that, and also, mast cell and so a lot of different health issues. And now she can run mini marathons. She can travel around. She does all these things, right? So her body healed itself. So point being is that there's a way to, you know, get yourself psyched up or create a biochemical shift that can help be a buffer to the pain. Like we've heard that, you know, certain biochemicals can help be, you know, a pain pill, if you will, type of thing. But then there's also a healing that's a difference. Like, so if somebody's...
Yeah. Sorry. So, is it possible that it's kind of like on an epigenetic level where you're actually able to... in some cases, flip a gene on or off to that facilitates that healing? Do you think?
You know,
that be part of it?
I honestly, the way I really, really see it is that different emotions trigger and they reach different parts of the body. And what's fun is actually after I healed myself, a few years afterwards, Carnegie Mellon University actually did show that different emotions do show up and create different neural path, different activity in different parts of the brain. So if somebody's, if two people are happy, then their brain scans will be similar with emotional, with brain activity. But if one person is happy and one person is sad, then they'll be different. Or if one person is fearful and the other person is feeling disgust, those even create a difference. And so they actually did show exactly that. And so what I would say is it's just like, you know, if somebody's embarrassed, face turns red, or panic and anxiety, it expresses itself in a different way compared to a sexual thought or sexual physical response. And I would say that our emotions have a specific expression to them. And so to me, it's really about identifying the specific emotion. So if somebody, you know, another person I worked with had a tumor in her throat, and her doctors were amazed because she would actually, right before surgery, she had a scan. They saw it there. The tumor had been there for months. And then her and I worked right before her surgery. And basically she literally the day before she showed up to her surgery and it was gone. And the ENT said, I've never seen anything like
this. Radical remission. There it is.
And, right. Yeah. And so, so I would say to me, the way that I've seen results is really about understanding the factors that are at play, bringing in optimism. If there are patterns of like guilt, self-punishment, self-criticism. So there's different ingredients and those can play a factor. Love can play a factor, which is why community is so important. Fear can play a factor. And so what happens is you take these factors and one of them on its own may not necessarily create illness, but then when you create that combination, that's when the fire starts, so to speak, that's what creates the problem. And so I would say that part of it has to do with feeling optimistic, a way to move forward in life. Another part has to do with patterns of guilt and then, or patterns of feeling, like I call them NPPs, negative punishment patterns. So guilt, self-criticism, things like that. And I would say also that I call symptom emotion, which is basically the specific emotion that designates where it shows up in the body. If it's in, you know, like there's an emotion of where is it going to show up? Embarrassment or anxiety or this, that, the other, or something more serious or, you know, in working with people, somebody who has a tumor, it's typically a different mindset than somebody who has rheumatoid arthritis. And so that's why MPD, you can see clearly that that's why that was so profound, is because it's not just about being happy, because some personalities with MPD can have no health issues at all. And some of them have a different health issue and some of them have a different health issue. And that's what was profound in saying, it's not just about it. Rewiring. It's not just about belief, because none of these people with MPD say, oh, well, I believe in a different personality, I'm going to have it. So it's beyond that. And that's when
Well, the MPD is really interesting, right? Because you have the same physical body with different emotions and beliefs. And so if you can kind of unpack and get down to those emotions, maybe you can start to understand and tie it back to,
Yeah. And I think also it's so funny because you mentioned this earlier, which is where you said where there's smoke, there's a fire, you know, and that's so true, because what happens is there are all these idioms in our languaging that actually do relate to things. Kind of like if you say, oh, somebody's a pain in the neck, or somebody's on my back, or I just feel like, you know, or somebody, I feel like people are stabbing me in the back, or I'm just carrying all this weight on my back. Or so there's all of these little idioms. There's an emotional connection, not just a belief connection, but an emotional connection that's tied to it. That's where there's smoke, there's fire. And so to speak, and these, they carry more truth and more awareness than people realize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's really, and does it tie back a little bit to that saying, what you speak, you will become? I mean, this goes back a little bit to what I was saying at the beginning, where you almost can, you know, like you're killing me kind of thing. And you like, you know, this is my job is killing me, or my job is, you know, like you wonder if maybe that starts to take on, like if you really start to embody it and believe it and live it and breathe it, that.
Yes. And what's fascinating, there was actually a study also done in 2022 on police officers, where the researchers were surprised to see that different stressors affected upper back pain compared to lower back pain.
Really?
So yes. So it's actually, the great thing is we can see there's actually more studies that are actually showing this very thing, that one type of stress will show up in a different way in the body than another. So yeah.
In different people. So, like
No, consistently.
Like no, that's not what I meant. I meant like this stress in person A, B, and C is going to show up in the low back versus that stress in all the people is going to show up in the upper back. That's fascinating.
Yeah. So we can actually see evidence of different emotions affecting the body differently, even at back pain.
Wow. So. Okay. So talk to us about what you do now. So you experienced this incredible healing.
Yes.
You got yourself, you threw away your cane, you tossed the wheelchair out the window. I am so done with this business.
I'm like superhuman. I tossed the wheelchair out the window. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I bet you did, actually, but...
Yeah. The study is actually in my book. So I recently wrote a book. And so there's that. And that's what I do is I help people to understand how to get real results. I want everybody to realize that it's not just me who can do this. Everybody can do this. And so I actually show it all the time. I'll demonstrate it with people who are experiencing physical pain back to back to back, where I show them how to shift their mind to get real results. And I would say, I mean, people are shocked of what that's what I love doing, is because like you even said earlier, like, how did you even do this? And you're an anomaly and people can't actually do this, but I show people back to back to back that they can. And I have seen people who have moved paralyzed body parts again, people who brought back vision, people who are getting rid of pain, showing it under medical equipment, I mean, all kinds of things. It's not because I'm so amazing. Yes, I'm amazing, but we're all amazing.
Yeah, well, you're and pretty amazing.
Thank you. And I received that. And, yeah, you know, because I'm not going to talk shit about myself.
No, as you should. No, you're pretty amazing. I mean, your work is amazing, right? And I would imagine that every time you help to shift someone, that is, I mean, that what an amazing thing to be able to do. To help people to see in themselves, really, right? Like you're
exactly. Every time I do it, I always say afterwards, who did that? You did that. I just coached you on how to do it. You're like, we are all the power. And this is what I love. Okay. So you're familiar with the 4-minute mile?
Yeah, sort of.
Okay. Basically, we used to think that it was impossible to 4-minute mile, right?
Yeah.
Everybody thought it was impossible. Then Roger Bannister then ran the 4-minute mile, ran a mile in under 4 minutes. And then after that, a bunch of people did it.
Yeah.
And so what I love is it's like, oh, wait a sec. It was literally thought to be impossible, humanly impossible. The body does not work that way. We can't possibly do it. And now everybody does it, right? Yeah. Now it's much faster even. And not that I can run a mile in under 4 minutes. It would take a little skill and then practice, but I could.
Theoretically.
So point being though, is that now it's a norm. Something that used to be impossible is now a norm. And I see the same thing where I'll help somebody release their own pain, but I have people messaging in saying exactly, oh my gosh, I released my pain. I can't believe I could actually do it. Oh, and I did this and I healed from this. That's what I want to do. I almost called my book, like I wanted at one point, I was like, I just want to call it like the 4-minute mind. And it's not because people necessarily need to heal in 4 minutes. It's because I want people to know that we're more amazing than we realize. And it seems impossible, but we can actually do it.
Well, it's that invisible wall that we've built, right?
And it's
that doesn't exist. Like what you're saying, like the 4-minute mile was a wall that people believe. It's almost like people ran up against the wall over and over and over again until some dude didn't believe there was a wall or didn't think about the wall and ran through it by accident. Like
exactly. And then just like you brilliantly said, where there's smoke, there's fire. Like you start, when you really start to notice all of the idioms and then you start to understand the brain body connection and you go, oh my, like you start to see it. And then you go, why didn't it? Like it literally what becomes impossible becomes obvious. And you go, well, obvious, like this just makes logical sense. Of course.
This may be the coolest episode of the year. All right. So Brandi Gilmore, where do people find you? Where do they learn more about your work and where can they access your work? Like if somebody's listening to this saying, all right, I'm going to believe that I can change this.
I would say this. I would say even check out a video of somebody doing it. I've got a video on my website, brandygilmore.com.
Okay.
And on my website, you can actually see a video of me doing this, working with somebody under live medical equipment. And there's a beautiful doctor, Dr. Hillary Smith, who does thermography. And she's running the thermography and I'm working with somebody. And you can literally see the pain and the scan go real time. Now, I make it look really, really easy. It does take real change, but that's what I would say. I would say, open your mind, look at it. So my website is brandygilmore.com. Gilmore is two L's, G-I-L-L-M-O-R-E.
Perfect. And we'll put that in the, show notes. And you have a book coming out or it's already out?
I have a book that's coming out soon, very shortly.
Okay. And what's it going to be called when it comes out soon?
It's going to be called Master Your Mind and Energy to Heal Your Body.
Love it. That says it right there. Anything. And you said you have a bunch of programs. And so those are on your website as well.
Yes, I have video courses and they are on my website and they're amazing.
And so do you, for your courses, are they just for the people who are in dire straits, like physical pain, the whole nine yards? Or does your work, I mean, I can imagine an application of your work to pretty much anybody for anything, just to up-level their mindset and up-level their performance and how they feel and the whole nine yards.
Exactly. It's, and that's because it's really good at shifting patterns. A lot of people will go through it for happiness or for manifesting and changing their mindset to create a different life and up-leveling their life. Because this is the thing, is healing requires a genuine change, not fake change, not pretend change, not thinking positive. Like, you actually have to rewire your mind. And so to get real results, to heal yourself, you have to rewire your mind. And so the great thing is that's what the course is all about. So yes, so people go through it to rewire their mind for happiness, positivity, love, all kinds of things all of the time. So it's beautiful.
Longevity, like at the end of the day, you know, centenarians are generally not the curmudgeons, generally speaking.
Generally speaking, they're happier people.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, Brandy, thank you so much for being here today, for taking the time and for all the amazing work that you do. And I feel so grateful to have met you.
You know, likewise, I love you, your energy, your glow, your being, your sense, you're just your personality. I love you. Like, we're going to have to, like, I don't know. We're going to hang out sometime. Like,
we're going to do some stuff for sure.
We're going to do stuff.
We're going to do stuff. So, all right. So it's brandygilmore.com. Gilmore with two L's, by the way. And check her out. Thank you so much. And check out that TED Talk, guys. You've got to watch it. It's so good. And I just, by the way, the last thing I want to say is I love your shoe, the shoes that you picked. Because folks will know what I mean when you watch the video. Check out the shoes. Thank you so much, Brandy. Have a great
night.
Thank you
so much. You too.
Hey guys, before we wrap up today's episode, I want to thank everyone who has left a 5-star rating and a review for the podcast. If you haven't yet left a rating and review and you love this episode, I would so appreciate it if you did. Each and every one truly helps the overall growth and success of the podcast, which allows me to continue to bring you more episodes and helps me to help more people to optimize their health and longevity. All you have to do if you're on Apple or on Spotify is open up Apple Podcasts or Spotify and take 2 seconds to click your rating and leave even just a 1-word review. Thank you so much for your continued support and for tuning into today's episode. If you have any questions about the episode or any questions you would like me to answer on the podcast, always feel free to reach out on Instagram at Natalie Nittam. I wish you all the best this week in biohacking your superhuman performance.
Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natnittam.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.